This is WGRE 91.5 FM, Greencastle, Indiana.
Good evening, and welcome to Music for Life, music from DePauw. This week, orchestra director Orsineth Smith fills us in on their upcoming appearances. We chat with new faculty member, violinist Erica Dicker. Members of our artist-in-residence, the Fifth House Ensemble, stop by to talk about what they have in store for us this year. Jazz Ensemble director Steven Snyder visits a desert island. And on the heels of Roomful of Teeth's amazing performance here as Green guest artists, we talk to their very own Pulitzer Prize-winning composer, Caroline Shaw. There are lots of exciting things going on in the DePauw School of Music, and we're glad you could join us for Music for Life. On Sunday, September 21st at 3 p.m. in Kresge Auditorium will be our first orchestra concert of the year. And here to chat with us about it is our orchestra conductor, Orsineth Smith. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
So what's on the docket?
Well, this is the year of the virtuoso. That's what I'm saying.
Oh,
good. Kind of a nice title for things. We are reviewing kind of the idea of the virtuosic talent with Capriccio Espagnol of Rimsky-Korsakov, originally written as a violin concerto. It was then played out through the whole orchestra, so that's very exciting. Also, we're doing a piece written for the Olympics in 1932 called Toward a New Life by Joseph Suk, and this connects to the rest of the season in that Joseph Suk was a friend of Dvorak, and so we're kind of highlighting that connection as a part of the Dvorak in America Festival that we have coming up in October and November with Joe Horowitz and our grant from the National Endowment for the Arts. Toward a New Life, the Joseph Suk piece, is referencing our new 21cm evolution.
Great.
As well on that program, we've taken the sketches of Edgar Varese's Tuning Up and created a piece of music where the orchestra seems as though it's playing in an improvisatory way, but it's all around tuning their instrument, and so it can be very raucous, it can be very calm, fantastic piece. Also on the program, we have works that will be performed by the DePauw Chamber Symphony when it's traveling in January to Austria.
Mm-hmm. And what will they be?
The Brahms Hungarian Dances 5 and 6, because Brahms was an accompanist for a very fine Hungarian violinist, and he became intrigued by all of these encores that this person would play. And so he arranged 21 of these Hungarian dances into works for piano, which then were arranged for orchestra. Finally, on the concert, there's a work by Johann Strauss Jr., Auf der Jagd, On the Hunt, which is a very fun, fast polka schnell, once again showing the virtuosity of our orchestra.
Ah, sounds like a great program. Now, will any of those make it on to DePauw Palooza?
No, thank you very much. DePauw Palooza, which is 2 days earlier on Friday, September the 19th at 5:30, which will include the University Band, the University Jazz Band, the University Choirs.
And a scene from Parade, a lot of stuff.
Great, yes. Stuff, yeah. We will be presenting three other very different works on that program, which we hope will meet the need of our audience from the wider university community.
So DePauw Palooza, we should say, is a concert we throw every year on the lawn for the College of Liberal Arts students. So we're really mixing up the programming there.
On that program will be Star Trek Into Darkness, highlights from Frozen, and the Captain America March.
The Captain America March, okay. So we've got a busy year in store for the orchestra. You're off to tour Vienna in January. We have the Dvorak Festival in October and November. We have the opera in the spring. And it all kicks off on
Sunday, September 21st at 3 p.m.
We hope to see you there, and thanks for coming in to chat about it.
Thank you.
From their appearance at our student recital hour of September 10th, 2014, here's a subset of the Fifth House Ensemble. Members Pablo Moreno on oboe, Jennifer Woodrum on clarinet, and Eric Heidbreder on bassoon perform the first two movements, Dialogue and Scherzino, from Alexandra Tonsman's Suite for Reed Trio. Thank you.
We always like to kick off our season by introducing our new faculty, and here to chat with me about her new appointment as term professor of violin at DePauw is Erica Dicker. Welcome.
Thank you so much. It's a great pleasure to be here.
Yeah, we're thrilled that you're here. So tell us a bit about your background. You've joined us and we're in the middle of a lot of exciting things in the 21CM world, and you've got an exciting background that ties into that.
So I accidentally sort of fell into this amazing sphere of experimental and avant-garde improvisation. I began the violin because I desperately wanted to play orchestral repertoire, desperately. I mean, when I was a small child, my parents, who are both musicians, have an incredible record collection. I spent most of my infancy with headphones attached to my head, just listening to this incredible and enormous music. And I just wanted to be part of this enormity. And
we should qualify that your parents are also college professors, right?
They are, respectively, oboe and bassoon.
Right.
And weirdly, they also met at the same festival I met my husband at.
Ooh, so now that is pretty strange.
Cosmic happening. But to make a long story short, I, you know, took up the violin intending to be an orchestral musician and succeeded in doing so. But there was, I don't know, something more that I wanted. Like, I wanted to achieve a complete mastery of my instrument. And to me, that included a spectrum of special effects and extended techniques. And it kind of also came out of, in addition to really loving my parents' record collection, when I was making friends in high school, they also had very interesting record collections. And I remember hearing John Cale play with the Velvet Underground for the first time and being like, holy cow, is that a viola? Like, I couldn't really fathom just the gorgeousness, what could be making these sounds. And when I realized that it was also a stringed instrument, mm-hmm. I really began exploring with extended techniques, electronics, pedals, and the whole spectrum of sonic potential mm-hmm. that could afford the violin.
And while you were doing that, you were still keeping up in the road show of orchestral life, traveling up and down the highway to
the Freeway Philharmonic, you
yeah,
bet.
There you go.
No, so I used to play associate concertmaster with the Peoria Symphony and was assistant principal second violin in the South Bend Symphony, and spent a lot of time playing with the Kalamazoo Symphony in Michigan because of that connection. I've subbed basically up till now pretty consistently with the Grand Rapids Symphony. I worked for a time in Germany. I had a temporary position there with a theater orchestra and played a lot of ballet and opera, which was just a dream come true in so many ways. But coming back from Germany, I was able to make a connection with the multi-reedist and composer Anthony Braxton and began performing in various contexts with him. And he really is the one that has sort of helped shape my career in contemporary and experimental music. Through him, I've been able to realize both my dreams of mm-hmm. playing, like, you know, this really intense soloistic experimental quasi-improvised music like John Cale, but also in the context of a full orchestra, because I serve as concertmaster of his Tricentric Trillium Orchestra, which is a group that was put together to premiere and disseminate his operas.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a really great honor and privilege doing that, and that also has led to a lot of collaborations in small groups with him, in which we also do a lot of work with electronics, particularly the Super Collider program. Mm. So oftentimes we'll perform in quartet contexts in which we also have this computer that ends up being our ghost sort of fifth member and interacting with us. So it's very exciting.
We have an interview coming up with Caroline Shaw later in this episode talking about many of the same things. So it's a really fascinating thread that's weaving through this. Now, when we found you a few days before classes started, you were in New York, right?
I was.
And we gave you, what was it, 72 hours or something? I don't remember.
Something
it wasn't
like
a lot. To move from New York to Greencastle, Indiana. And you pulled it off.
Well, the secret to my success is I've never spent too much time in the same place.
Because yeah. You'd just come back to New York from Germany.
Actually, from finishing the coursework for my doctoral degree at CCM, the Cincinnati Conservatory
That's
of
right.
Music. It's hard to keep track of me. No one can. I can barely even keep track of myself. But yeah, so after I was in Germany, briefly alighted in Chicago before moving to New York.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I don't know, while I was in New York, I developed a lot of contacts with universities in and around the New York City area and was able to do a bit of adjunct teaching and realized that I really wanted to teach at the college level. And mm-hmm. so that's what sort of led me to pursue my doctoral degree, even mm-hmm. though I'd been out of school for over a decade.
Mm-hmm. How are things going for you here?
Wonderfully. Teaching for me has always gone hand in hand with performance. And I don't know, it feels like a tremendous relief in a way to be able to share all of this wonderful tradition and this craft and be able to transmit it to other mm-hmm. people. It feels really good.
So what all are you teaching this semester?
An incredible number of wonderful young violinists, private lessons. I'm coaching chamber music, and as well as playing with the faculty chamber ensemble, which is very exciting. And I'm hoping to get off the ground next semester a violin audition repertoire and preparation class.
So. Ah, terrific. Well, we're certainly glad you're here. And, you know, we talk about the 21st century musician as a person who is flexible and entrepreneurial. And we've certainly tested you already on that, to be so flexible and to be here on such short notice and to land with your feet on the ground and ready to make great things happen. And we're looking forward to working with you this year. Thanks for coming to DePauw and thanks for coming to chat about it.
Thank you very much for having me.
Continuing the Fifth House Ensemble's Woodwind Trio's performance on this week's recital hour of Alexandre Tonsman's Suite for Reed Trio, here's the third movement, Aria.
We're thrilled that Fifth House has come back to us this year and are on their first visit this week. And I'm going to have everyone go around the room and introduce yourself and what your instrument is. And we'll start with you, Melissa.
Melissa Snoza. I'm the executive director for Fifth House Ensemble and also the flutist in the group.
And I'm Eric Heidbreder. I play bassoon in the group.
Jennifer Woodrum. I'm the clarinetist.
I am Pablo Moreno, and I play the oboe.
And I'm Anna Duncan, and I am the program director for Fifth House.
So last year, we all had this great time together throughout the year doing lots of interesting things, the finale of which was Harvest, the concert that we put on for the community that was celebrating the people and places of Putnam County. And what do you have up your sleeve this year?
This is going to be a great opportunity to continue some of the relationships that we've built, both within the School of Music, within the greater DePauw community, and also with the larger communities in Greencastle and Putnam County. What we're looking to do is to really build opportunities for students to create new performance projects off campus. And we're asking the question, what does it mean when you have an amazing School of Music and Performing Arts Center in a town like Greencastle? And the other thing that's really wonderful is that in the course of producing Harvest, we discovered the rich abundance of resources that exist within this community, both in terms of places to play, schools that are really looking forward to having School of Music students participate, and also local individuals and businesses that have a ton of resources and knowledge that could be shared with musicians as they're embarking on their next professional steps as part of 21CM. This was an outcome that none of us were really anticipating in quite this way, and it became one of the most exciting parts of the project.
Yeah, I think that's part of the fun of 21CM is you never know where it's going to go. we rarely know where it's going to start, and where it leads us is always an interesting place. And today, on the day that this was recorded, you guys performed for our recital hour, a fantastic and mesmerizing work. Can you tell me a little bit about that piece?
The Tansman Trio is a piece that goes really well with the Luna de Cuernos story. It's kind of a typical French woodwind trio piece. We love playing in this instrumentation. It's absolutely fantastic because we get to show off a little technique. We get to play beautiful and we get to be really kind of rhythmic and staccato with our articulations. The Jörg Widmann fantasy for solo clarinet is a real joy to play, especially when I'm telling the story of the evil goat that is lurking in the garden. I can't imagine more appropriate sounds.
Right. So this was a piece that actually had a video piece that accompanied it. As you're telling us this story, and that Widmann was, that guy was not a clarinet player. He had it out for clarinet players. That's too hard.
No, you are wrong.
Oh, he was a clarinet player. He just wanted to show off how good he was. Is that what it was?
Jörg Widmann is indeed a very successful touring clarinetist who spreads his career at, you know, pretty equally as a composer and a clarinetist. So in a lot of ways, it's kind of awful because I have no right to say, oh, this is too hard. I could never play this because he does it.
Right. Yeah, he proves
and he
it
does
can
it
be done.
Very well.
Well, we definitely got our money's worth out of the clarinet line today. That's for sure. But the bassoon line was really a very cool writing throughout as well.
Yeah, so the bassoon's role in the Tansman is kind of as the motor during the second and fourth movements. And during the second movement, it's this image of a rock rolling down a hill. So I'm kind of the motion of the rock rolling. That's how I consider it, at least. Mm-hmm. And in the finale, there's this kind of driving rhythm that's going on. And this is like a fight scene. Everybody's getting chased inside the house by this giant goat dragon that Jenny portrayed with the Widmann. And at the very end, we have this great moment where the ants show up in the story, the unlikely heroes, so to speak. And we end with this beautiful chorale.
You know, the aria was really beautiful. The blend in the oboe line, that was really beautiful, mesmerizing.
We were talking in the rehearsals that they actually get the part of suffering, playing piano and staccato, and they just play beautiful lines.
Yeah, this is time to show off the beauty of the oboe. The rest of them will do all the heavy lifting. That'll be okay. Yeah. But, you know, it tied in nicely to one of the things you were teaching in class last night, that first line of one of the slides that said, if you don't have the goods, or what was that line?
Yeah, we were just talking about the philosophy of starting up a new arts organization, and that we were going to be sharing a lot about the different thought processes and the tools and the tricks and everything that you have to do. But at the end of the day, you have to have the goods. Mm-hmm. End of discussion. And so what's so fantastic about students here within the School of Music is that they're getting that training. And I don't want to perpetuate any sort of myths about the fact that people should be spending the time that they would have spent in the practice room learning how to market.
Right, right.
It's in addition to, because if you don't have that training, you know, even a third grader with no previous musical experience knows what excellence is.
Right. And it's interesting because every artist that we've had throughout the Green Guest Artist Series or 21CM have all said this in one way or another. I remember the first line from Time for Three. Someone said, well, you know, what does it take to be a 21st century musician? And the answer was one word, chops. You know, people think, oh, well, now if you're just decorating and making up for poor musicianship. No, you have to have absolutely stellar musicianship if you're going to pull all this off. And we certainly heard stellar musicianship on the stage today. That was really fantastic. That was great kickoff to our visit. So, Anna, you've got to be busy keeping all of the fleas shoveled across the barnyard, as it were.
Keeping everyone in line
well,
a little bit.
Well, since last year was our agricultural metaphor, I was reaching there.
Makes sense.
So what do you guys have up your sleeve? You've got a lot of things planned throughout the year. How many times will you be here now?
Absolutely. So Fifth House will be here 6 times throughout the school year, 3 times in the fall and 3 times in the spring. In addition to that, since Melissa is teaching the practicum course that's happening in spring semester, the students will have a chance to see a little bit more of her as well as they're working on and developing projects that they can then take into the Greencastle community, and we hope to be a part of helping to bring those outside.
Yeah, and one of the things that, you know, people are always talking about the flipped classroom and using technology and all that, but we're certainly doing that since you're in Chicago and we're here, and next semester you'll be teaching a class, so we'll be Skyping in and asynchronous communication and all of that, so that should be great fun.
Yeah, great fun, and I will say that we've been really excited to look at the Hub as a resource that, you know, there's this online...
Oh, you're letting out a secret.
Oop.
Yeah, no, that's okay. So we've told people that we're going to be releasing a website soon, but because Melissa is special, we let her peek behind the curtain. So go ahead, let it out. It's all right. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. Well, I will say, okay, this top secret tool, which is currently in development, is a fantastic way for emerging artists to not only communicate what they are up to and to share a portfolio for themselves, but also for groups of artists to work together on a project. So as this is starting to be rolled out, like one of the test cases for this is how can this be useful in a class?
Right.
And so as we're talking about the idea of teaching a practicum course remotely, and also just even within the same building, having students working on a project together, they have this tool now that they can use to share ideas, resources, video, documents, documentation, you know, everything is open when it comes to this. And I think it's going to make a huge difference, both in terms of creating the projects and then eventually communicating them as they complete.
Right. 21cm.org will be launched later in the year. And a part of 21cm.org is actually a social space and a networking space that's called The Hub. And we have great plans on the long term for The Hub. But right now we have a lot of beta testers, which we affectionately refer to as guinea pigs, that we are trying this thing out and seeing if they can break it and what works and what doesn't. And it's a great way actually to tie us even more strongly together as a community with you guys and your work in Chicago and us and our work here. And then the interplay when we're there or you're here. And now through that space, hopefully we can work together even more closely. And of course, the finale of this effort this year is your collaboration with Balladino.
Yes, this is something that we are intensely excited about. You know, probably a little over a year ago, our bassist got to know the bassist in the group for Balladino over YouTube, of all things. So now that we're just talking about The Hub as being a great way for musicians to communicate, he got to know him because he creates these amazing videos, everything from original compositions that he creates with a looping pedal to covers of the Mad Men theme song or the Dexter theme song. And he's wonderful. So, you know, Eric started communicating with him online and he said, hey, you know, my group is going to be here in Chicago. You should definitely come check us out. And because he's based in Israel, what a great opportunity. So Eric went out and immediately afterwards said to me, that was one of the most amazing performances I've ever seen in my entire life. What are we going to do with these folks? And so it started to be this conversation around how they as individual musicians took their classical training and then what turned into extensive training in jazz improvisation and electronic music. And then they really wanted a way to connect to their ancestors. These are folks who grew up in Israel, but have their roots in a ton of different countries across the world, some of whom are actually quite difficult for them to visit. And so what they did was they started to explore Ladino music or Jewish Sephardic music, which has its roots in countries across Europe and the Middle East. And it's a way for them to use what they've learned in their wide variety of musical skills to reimagine these ancient musical forms.
And, you know, it comes right back to that point. You know, if you don't have chops, and these guys, it doesn't matter what instruments they're playing, some of which they built themselves from found objects practically, and what incredible musicians.
It's unbelievable. We actually went to another one of their shows in Chicago, and I remember Eric sitting in the middle of the row when Yoni brings out this tunable didgeridoo.
Ooh.
And Eric is seeing him pick this thing up. He's like, is that a... Oh my gosh, it's a didgeridoo. He's going to do it. He's going to do it.
Stand back, here it comes.
And it just, you just saw everybody's head explode when this thing happened. So, you know, they're incredible improvisers. They're fierce musicians. They're incredibly adventurous. I mean, what a great example for what a 21st century musician can be.
And do you have any idea what you guys are going to do together yet? You're still working that out?
Yeah, we actually have sort of a formula that we're working with. About a third of the music that we're looking at is going to come from their repertoire. So they're recording a new album right now. They have a lot that they've been working on. About a third of it is going to come from music that we know of that is, you know, music by contemporary composers that touch on similar themes or concepts in some way. And with both of these categories, we're going to be looking to Dan Visconti, who is our composer on our roster, to help us to create arrangements that allow for groupings from within our ensembles to work together. So, for instance, an example of that, there's a piece that Dan wrote called Black Bend, which is completely steeped in the blues. And how fun would it be to have some members of Balladino join us for that and improvise on top? And then the final third of it is going to be a newly composed work for us by Dan all together.
And we put Dan through his paces last year trying to put together all the disparate elements that made up Harvest. And you know, he did a great job of blending that. So we look forward to this final performance. So it's going to be a great year. This is just step one of a year-long process. And we hope that you'll join us in May and see this great group, Fifth House Ensemble, performing with their guest, Balladino, as our guest on the final performance of the Green Guest Artist Concerts. Lots of great things going on with 21st Century Musician. We'll keep you informed. Thanks for coming in to chat about it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm John Corigliano, and you're listening to Music for Life.
Concluding the Fifth House Ensemble's Woodwind Trio's performance of Alexandre Tansman's Suite for Reed Trio, here's the fourth movement, Finale.
One of the things we like to do with our faculty, especially our new faculty, is to drop them on a desert island with a defective iPod. So the iPod only plays for 5 minutes, and this is the 5 minutes of music that you will hear over and over again until we finally decide to rescue, if we decide to rescue. And so we're going to drop Dr. Steven Snyder on the island, and what's on your iPod?
John Coltrane's A Love Supreme.
Really? Just the three-note motto?
Well, no. The whole track, it plays what, 5 minutes?
Yeah.
Oh.
But no, you can. It's okay. You don't have to get down into the weeds on what part of the track, but it's A Love Supreme, and why?
Wow, just the range that piece covers in terms of emotion, tempo, feel, everything that's included in that is just deep in so many ways.
Is that your most profound jazz piece in your own thinking?
You know, it's difficult just to pick one.
Yeah, it is.
When there's so many that have had an impact on me as a musician and what I'm trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely that one is at the top of the list of all-time favorites.
So would you start that track, because you only got 5 minutes. Is it going to start at the top? Is it going to start on one of the solos? Anything in particular you want to tell us about?
I'd probably start in the second movement.
There you go. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that album? Because that album has an interesting story.
Yeah, it's in four movements. Mm-hmm. The four titles are acknowledgement, resolution, pursuance, and psalm.
And what's he up to? What's A Love Supreme?
It's kind of an altruistic piece in a number of different ways. A Love Supreme translates into a motive that's heard at the end of the first movement. Mm-hmm. And during the course of the first movement, you hear that motive played by Coltrane in all different keys. So the imagery is that A Love Supreme is everywhere. Mm-hmm. So it begins with that, and it ends with actually a musical depiction of the text that's on the album cover. So you can listen to the last movement and watch the words go by, and it has sort of a preacher type of a mm-hmm. feeling to it in the way that he speaks those words through his horn.
So right. And so since you're new, we're going to give you a special dispensation and let you take the album cover with you so that you can keep that on.
Yeah, that'll help.
So we'll come get you someday. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you. Thank you.
were thrilled to have Room Full of Teeth on campus this week for an incredible performance and masterclass and an opportunity to do some video interviews. And we're especially excited that Caroline Shaw is able to join us in the studio, one of the Grammy-winning musicians in Room Full of Teeth and also a Pulitzer Prize winner in her own right. Welcome, Caroline.
Hi, thanks, Mark.
So I love it that you don't refer to yourself as a composer. You refer to yourself as a musician. Now, folks probably know you in a lot of different ways. Some people might think you're only a singer in A Room Full of Teeth. They hear you sing. They think, well, she can't be that good unless that's your whole life. And then they hear you play violin, and they think, well, she must just be a violinist. And people who've heard your works and know what you've done as a composer, and yet you choose to refer to yourself only as a musician. Why?
Part of it is, for me specifically, kind of works to encompass everything that I do, but I also like that the implications that it has kind of in the music world, it's just a very inclusive word. So it's not just a part of the classical music world, but even other traditions where the musician is the composer, is the writer, is the improviser, is the performer. And I think it just opens the gate a little bit.
I was having a conversation with someone about you the other day, and they were saying, you know, this really is the new model. I mean, Caroline is an accomplished string player, an accomplished singer, an accomplished composer, and that's kind of the new model. And I kind of chuckled and said, actually, new, just like Mozart, you know, because this is kind of the old model, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, Eric was talking about that earlier. It is kind of an older model. And so there's Mozart and a lot of composers earlier than that.
Yeah, and so in a way, we've come full circle. I think that, you know, we really went down the path as the 20th century evolved, that the performance specialist, you know, we're going to know ever narrower sections of music better and better and deeper and deeper. And now we've kind of walked away from that a bit. Now we're much more the Renaissance person.
Yeah, I mean, there's something also very beautiful about specializing and the kind of very detailed, sort of ornate, I suppose, like a detailed, ornate sense of life that you can have as a specialist. If you just, if you play the oboe and you know every single thing about about that, it's a really beautiful thing. And, you know, someone who's creating for that can create a specific kind of art. But I work in a, maybe it's just a slightly different aesthetic. I kind of move around. So.
And do they influence each other? So, you know, do you often find yourself as a violinist thinking, how would I approach this as a vocalist or as a composer, hearing it more from a string versus a vocal? I mean, do they intersect?
Well, there's a piece that we did here at DePaul called Ritornello that is actually sort of an interesting experiment for myself.
Yeah, there's two versions.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it was just, a you know, basically a month after the Pulitzer announcement, and, you know, my life was a little bit crazy for a while. And someone proposed this idea of, you have two nights of your music. And I said, well, what if one night is with Room Full of Teeth and one night, the next day I'll play with Acme. I played in a string quartet. And what if I wrote the same piece for both groups and they're separate? And what if I made a film that kind of ties it together? So it was an interesting challenge to write vocal music that works for strings and string music that works for voices. So kind of thinking about what I do, imposing these little restrictions on it, but also it opens up a different world.
And let's use that piece as an example.
Yeah.
Does it work better in your own mind? Now that you get to hear it both ways, does it work better one way or the other? Or is it truly that piece that can go anywhere it wants to go?
I think it's a piece that'll expand kind of like an accordion, I think much, much larger. I'm going to combine actually strings and voices later on and yeah, some other ideas.
So when you sit down to write now, is it more that I'm sitting down so that I can write this commissioned work or this particular piece? So ideas come to you because it's already defined, or do you still have the opportunity to kind of think in a more global way and say, I'm not sure where this idea is going to take me yet?
I like to have both projects going now. So now, I, up until last year, I didn't work on commission. I'd never written on commission. And now I do that some, and that's a really great challenge. I says, here are the rules. I like rules, you know, and also here's the sort of corners of freedom that you have. But then I kind of keep other projects for myself, like Ritornello, that's really just for me. And I have other things sort of in the pipeline where I let it go wherever it needs to go.
Oh, that's wonderful. It's interesting to me that, so you are at Princeton. You're still, right? You're working on a doctorate at Princeton, is that correct?
Yeah.
And you are the first composer from Princeton to actually win the Pulitzer. And Princeton's had great composers. And here you are, the youngest winner of a Pulitzer Prize in music composition ever, and the only one from Princeton. Did that surprise you?
Oh, I think it's, you know, what would I say? It's a little bit of a crapshoot. So, I don't think about it very much, you know. There's so many great people doing, making great music now, and some get certain accolades and some get others, and yeah.
So that, I just have to ask this question, though. Yeah. Okay, so you win the Pulitzer Prize, mm-hmm. and then you go to your next composition lesson. So how did that go? So, you know, okay, let's see. My student just won a Pulitzer, and they're coming in for their lesson today. What was that?
Well, I think the teaching at Princeton is very... it's individualized, so some people work more on a sort of weekly lesson basis, and others are a little bit looser, and you kind of choose the way you'd like to work.
And so, you're in that looser category.
I'm definitely in the looser category.
What role does improvisation play for you? Because mm-hmm. you're a practicing performer as mm-hmm. well as a composer, and oftentimes composers, as they move on, devote more and more time to composition, less and less time to performing, and there, you refuse to do that. You're still very much in a lot of worlds. Does improvisation play a part in all that you do? Is it important? Is that an important skill for you and for 21st century musicians now? Does it influence the way that you think as a composer or as you perform?
It's so deeply ingrained in what I do, I don't think about it. I don't think like, oh, improvisation, I should think about improvising now. It's just a sense of having a grasp of the musical language that where you can, like right now, I have no idea what's going to come out of my mouth next, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. but you just sort of keep speaking. Mm-hmm. But you're sort of trained in a way that you can sort of control the improvisation when it comes out. When I'm actually playing in my gigs now, like with Roomful of Teeth and with Acme, there's not often improvisation involved in the performance, but somewhat in rehearsal, you know? Mm-hmm. You kind of, and when I was writing music for Roomful of Teeth, there's a little bit of improvisation rehearsal. So let's try this, let's try mm-hmm. that. And now when I write music, I rely a lot on sort of what intuitively comes out. I record a lot of my own improvisations, mm-hmm. and then you sort of have the clay to, you know, carve out and shape and build the house from there.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here at DePauw, we're knee-deep into trying to change the mm-hmm. modern music school to reflect more of the 21st century skills necessary today. Right. As we were talking about, what was old is new again. And I think the way of the performance specialist is waning a bit as those people who are fully embracing their musicianship in all kinds of ways mm-hmm. Comes to life. And you kind of are your own genre. I mean, how do you categorize your music?
The music that I write?
That you write.
Gosh. I know it's really inspired by older music. Mm-hmm. Renaissance, in a way, people have said. And for me, actually, sort of the structure and architecture of Brahms. Mm-hmm. I really think about that a lot, the way he lifts and settles. I don't really know what genre it is.
Right. And I think that's another part of it, is
yeah.
that the genre boundaries are just going out the window now. They don't really
right.
matter anymore.
Yeah.
And the classical training that you have influences what you're doing. We mm-hmm. hear it. But no one would refer to your music as classical in the style of Mozart or Brahms because mm-hmm. it's bigger, it's newer, it's different than that.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of, I mean, we all grew up listening to a lot of different music, and I didn't want anyone to tell me what I couldn't write. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I avoided that for a long time. So there's a little bit of folk in there. I definitely love hymns and folk music. There's a little bit of influence of this band called Tune Yards, a woman named mm-hmm. Meryl Garbus. Mm-hmm. It's just the kind of bravery that she has that's in there.
Yeah, that's something that I love about you and about Roomful of Teeth is the bravery. Just fearlessness. Let's go do this.
Just
take it on. Let's do that.
Open your mouth really wide. Say ah.
Exactly. So one of the great things about Music for Life is that we get to speak to so many great composers and musicians as they come through and perform for us and do master classes, and all right, we do festivals around their work. And a few years ago, we were very fortunate to have Libby Larson in the studio, and mm-hmm. we were talking to Libby about her storied career and the many accomplishments and the things that were important to her and the things that are important to her and the things that she has accomplished but the things that she still sees she needs to accomplish. Mm-hmm. So when we have you back and you're Libby Larson's age, what will you want to be able to say about your career at that point? Mm-hmm. You're at the beginning of an incredibly promising career and it's just unfolding before you. So what do you want to be able to say?
I definitely want to be able to say that my music moved someone and meant something and was designed really well so that it was moving in a few different levels and that I was a really good person and that sort of created a better world around me than was there before.
That's terrific.
I hope that's okay.
That's perfect. Thank you for coming into chat.
Oh, thanks very much, Mark.
To finish off this week's episode, from their performance this past weekend here in Kresge Auditorium, Here's the conclusion of Roomful of Teeth's performance of Caroline Shaw's Pulitzer Prize-winning composition, Partita for Eight Voices.
We hope you've enjoyed this week's episode of Music for Life. We love hearing from listeners. You can contact us by emailing musicforlife@depaul.edu. We're also on Facebook at DePaul Music for Life, and you can subscribe to our show on iTunes by searching there for DePaul Music for Life. Our student producers are Anna Gatdula, Matt Skiba, Burke Stanton, Rachel Amalfitano, and Hannah Gothier. Our 21CM graduate intern is Elika Okerstrom. Veronica Pedrell is our online editor, and our show is produced by Matthew Champagne in the Judson and Joyce Green Center for the Performing Arts at DePaul University in Greencastle, Indiana. I'm Mark McCoy, Dean of the School of Music. Thank you for listening to our show. Keep music in your life, and have a great week.
It's Music for Life.